this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Happy New Year, Wheeler.
Happy New Year.
What do you got there?
Is your mouth empty?
Man, this is family-friendly podcast here, Wheeler.
No,
come
I'm
on.
Just I'm
family
asking.
Family-friendly podcast,
this is family-friendly. I was talking about chips. Chips and dips.
Here.
We're at Westlake Brewing in Deep Elm in Dallas, and just in the shadows of downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
And Whiteley's over here stuffing his face and pounding down beers. The last
New Year's Day, man, come on.
The last time we here, and you're having the super dry, is
super
that what
dry,
it's called?
Yeah.
And I'm having the porter here, which only has a sip left, so I'm going to have to get that refreshed.
And I'm the one pounding down the beers, right?
Yeah.
I'm that guy.
You're probably, beyond me, though. You're probably on your second one there. The last time we were here, and I've talked about this before,
yeah.
We were speaking with Ed Lavandera from CNN about this really incredible piece that he did called Deep in the Pockets of Texas for CNN.
Documentary for CNN.
Yes. And it was all talking about how we have got these two billionaires here in Texas who've been, helping candidates to get elected around the state and, further to the right. Candidates in a lot of cases. And one of the big priorities that they have is school vouchers and, trying to push that here in Texas, which it's been kind of an uphill push. There's been some resistance to doing this in past legislatures, but, we've seen it gaining some traction as the years have gone by. And so, we're revisiting some of our episodes from last year that were the biggest of, the
Let's
episodes
to,
that
right.
we had downloaded. And one of them had to do with this very subject.
And this is going to be in the news again this month right now because
Absolutely.
The legislature is going to be meeting on the 10th of January is when they gavel back into session. But if you don't know what school vouchers are, just quick 10-cent version of them. The idea is you can take the chunk of tax money that you pay into your public school, your ISD, you can take that and apply that money to a private school if you want to send your kid to another type of educational location.
Yeah, so, proponents of this call it school choice.
School choice.
Opponents say that it totally undermines public schools.
You'll
though.
Gut the public schools if you're taking money out of their budgets. And,
right.
How will they be able to buy, erasers for their chalkboard, et cetera, keep the lights on,
because what you take to that private
exactly.
school is coming out of the budgets of the local school districts.
What struck us about this episode, I remember why we originally did it, but the opponents in this episode are a religious organization.
Right.
Baptist ministers are against this idea. They're not the only ones against it, but for the fact that you have a religious organization coming out against it, when, as you said, school vouchers who are proposed by far-right candidates and far-right ideas, they're still having trouble with a Republican-led legislature. And now the fact that you have Baptists who are again coming out against this, that's something to be said there, I think, about this.
And so we revisit this episode now. We had two men on the podcast with us this time. The first, Reverend Charles Johnson, the Executive Director of Pastors for Texas Children. We also brought in Mark Wingfield, who is the Executive Director and Publisher of Baptist News Global. And they shared their thoughts on this, and it was fairly enlightening to hear their point of view.
Let's press play.
All right, everybody, welcome back for another week of Y'allitics. Jason, what are you drinking today?
This is a first for me, my friend. Empty pint glass here today.
Wow.
Empty pint glass. You know why, Wheeler? Because we're going to church. So show me what you're drinking, man.
This is not a first for you. You had dry January.
I know. I wake up all the time. It's so dry.
I'm drinking that right there.
Straight gin? Is that Hendrick's gin? What is that?
That's three shots of vodka in a glass. It's water, just pure water, because you're right. We're going to be speaking with a reverend here first, and it just seemed, seemed wrong.
Yeah, no, you can't crack a beer and then talk religion and politics with...
We're talking about religion, and not just religion and politics, we're talking about religion and politics and public education all in one here, and it seems like all of those have kind of melded together, depending on, what school board meeting you're in or, in some cases, which ad you're listening to.
We've been talking about, how to do this and trying to do this podcast for a while because, we've seen superintendents leave. We've seen an outgoing state legislator from Fort Worth. His name is Matt Krause, a Republican, sending out a letter late last year to a number of school districts asking if they had any of 850 books in their libraries. Why? He didn't really explain why, but he wanted to find out if they did. There's a lot of scrutiny of public education right now, and there are a number of pastors and Baptist religious leaders who are pushing back on this, defending public school teachers. In fact, there's an organization in Fort Worth, in Tarrant County in North Texas, called Pastors for Children. It's based there in Fort Worth, and they're taking out an ad to counter all of this stuff. The ad started playing Monday on television and on radio. Here's one of them in case you haven't heard it.
Texas public schools are under attack. Hardliners refer to your neighborhood school as a babysitting service and teachers as unemployable adults. They want to close our public schools and send your tax dollars to private and charter schools without taxpayer accountability. Enough with this garbage. It's time to stand and fight for our kids. We are calling on parents and teachers to vote for candidates that will support and protect our schools, not for those that'll destroy them. Political ad paid for by Pastors for Children.
So Wheeler, what you have here, you have evangelicals pushing back against conservatives. Let me say that again. Evangelicals pushing back against conservatives. That's what's so odd about this, man.
Yeah, it is. And this, of course, is one of many ads that you're going to be hearing right now because we are in the thick of political season, early voting now underway for the primaries here in Texas. This is a midterm year, bunch of things on the ballot, bunch of people on the ballot. But, you know, these folks are basically saying, don't forget about the bottom of the ballot. You know, when you start getting into these school board races and these local races, because there is a concerted movement now, as you were talking about, Jason, to take on public education and in some cases to take out public education and push for these voucher programs. And so they're coming out strong, not only trying to get people to vote, but trying to get people involved in this process so that it's not just one side that you keep seeing at these heated school board meetings with these, you know, beleaguered superintendents who just keep on falling off of the job. Yeah. They're leaving in droves.
They are. I think there's, what, 8 or 9 that are gone from North Texas alone.
I looked up jobs the other day for superintendents in Texas, and there were dozens of entries if you wanted to, you know, try to get a superintendent job.
Yeah, I'm just fine with co-hosting Yolitics here.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have two people on our program today, and the reason we aren't drinking is because we are going to talk to both of these folks here today. Not that I guess it matters. I mean, we've had beers with ambassadors and different folks. But anyways, out of respect, we just want to, put down the pint for today. We have Mark Wingfield on. He is the executive director of Baptist News Global. He's from North Texas. He wrote an op-ed that I found scrolling through Facebook the other day, and the thing started trending.
The only one who saw that in your feed.
Yeah, it's probably why I showed up in my feed. So it started trending after that. But we also saw in my Twitter feed a little Twitter fight, a little argument going on between U.S. Congressman Chip Roy from Central Texas, a Republican from Central Texas, and an organization that took out that ad you just heard a moment ago called Pastors for Texas Children.
So we have on the line with us here Reverend Charles Foster Johnson, who is a part of Texas Pastors for Children. He's also co-pastor of BREAD, which is a faith community in Fort Worth, Texas. And he has been pretty busy lately, Jason, not in politics, but, you know, with this ad and on social media and not necessarily busy with politics in the way that, you know, most of the rest of us are engaging.
Pastor, thanks for being here. You have been super busy, as Jason was mentioning, but early voting is also underway. So have you had a chance to even cast your ballot yet?
Jason, I haven't. We don't endorse candidates. I joke with people. I don't have too many confidential or discreet statements to make about public education. I kind of have one note and I hit it hard and loud and often.
What note is that then?
Yeah, that the whole community should overwhelmingly, unanimously support public schools.
Yeah.
And teachers are our first responders, and they are frontline workers for the common good. And the teaching profession should be among the most esteemed in the community. And we should turn the classroom over to that well-trained, God-called teacher. And that is a moral obligation and a moral provision. Therefore, clergy should be the chief public education advocates.
Well, Pastor, if I'm watching the news, there's a lot of evangelical Christians that I would think probably don't agree with you. What do you say to them?
Yeah, I don't know if that's correct, Jason. It does seem that way, doesn't it? I think what we have is some of our political leaders who have gotten the memo from highly politicized factories in Washington, disinformation factories, to attack public school teachers. And so they're doing that in an artificial and contrived way. And we're seeing a real disconnect between what people like Ted Cruz and Chip Roy are saying on one hand, and the people, even the evangelical people like me and like our pastors in the community, on the other hand. It's very, very interesting. Now, having said that, of course, we do have a few faith leaders who, for whatever reason, think that public education is wrong and do not support it. But the overwhelming majority of pastors of all denominations and all traditions, including other faiths, Jewish and Muslim, know that we've got to educate our children, that that's God's will. And the only way to protect and really preserve that is through the public trust.
Pastor, since you bring up Chip Roy, let's talk about him. He's the congressman from the 21st Congressional District, which stretches from Austin down towards San Antonio and then out in points west. And he has really been out there looking for what he calls education freedom, which we take to mean, perhaps charter schools and drifting away from the public education model. He's been real critical about what he calls critical race theory teaching and woke teaching, that it's a liberal industry, essentially. There's a group called Texas Pastors for Children. I assume you're part of that group there on Twitter, right?
I am the executive director of Pastors for Texas Children. That's correct. And our 501c4 is Pastors for Children.
And I'm not sure if you're the one who actually writes the tweets, but somebody did and sent this one out that says, attack teachers, lie about them, call them pornographers. They know that teachers are too busy saving kids' lives to push back. This is the new moral swamp of Texas politics. And then the back and forth began. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. And even last week, Jason, unfortunately, it feels awful to be personally attacked. Our nonprofit, it does feel personal, by a federal congressman. That's a pretty powerful position. There are only 435 of them, if I can remember my public school civics lessons accurately. And so this man has a lot of power. He knows that CRT and anti-Americanism is not taught in public schools. Do we have a few isolated incidents? Of course we do. It's a big system. We have 8,500 public schools. We have 1.2 million active and retired teachers. Hey, there isn't any such thing as a perfect church, and there's no such thing as a perfect school system. But look, for a congressman to take that isolated incident and just levy this broadside against our teachers, 65% of our children are poor, y'all. They're on free and reduced lunch. These are people who work long hours at low pay with our poorest children. It is the responsibility of the governor, the lieutenant governor, our Senate members, and our federal congressmen to support them, to encourage them, to have messaging that is going to lift them up. And the nonprofit faith leaders and pastors who undergird them, pray for them, who encourage them, who support them. So what happened was Thursday, a week ago, Congressman Roy came after us, trolled us. We didn't tag him. He saw our message. He trolled us. He attacked us with, you read the Baptist News Global article, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mark Wingfield talked to you about that. And then yesterday again, or the day before yesterday, all over again. And I'm thinking, Congressman, we got a lot of challenges in this country. Do you really want to take your time lambasting pastors who are trying to uphold the public good, the constitutionally provided and protected public good in the Texas Constitution? So, yeah, it's unpleasant, and we don't understand it. But it's speaking of woke, it sure woke us up. What is going on here?
Yeah,
for a federal congressman to, frontally attack ministers.
Yeah, just for people who haven't seen the tweet, the congressman basically responded back that you all were using Texas teachers to hide behind while you were in cahoots with powerful teachers' unions to subject non-rich parents to what he calls a monopoly system with little control or options for their kids. And then he said, very pastoral of you. Did you ever think that you would be in a position of defending your religiosity, essentially?
Jason, we're in a strange time. We're in a dangerous time. No is the answer to your question. And, you know, everybody is just nonplussed. Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, moderates, you know, we've got a few liberals in Texas, not many. They all probably live down there in Austin. So maybe Congressman Roy's perspective is a little skewed down there. But he's wrong about the voucher protecting poor children. Voucher schools failed. The data is in. We have a data, you know, informed conclusion on that. Poor children are much better off in our traditional public schools. Do we have issues and problems, challenges? You better believe we do. I mean, we're 44th in the nation in per pupil spending in Texas. It could start by properly funding our schools. But to take that $4,000 or $5,000 voucher, that doesn't pay for a quality education for a child. Congressman Roy knows that. No, what that money is going to do is subsidize the private education for affluent families whose children are already in private schools. And he knows that. Those are the people in his political base that he wants to placate. I imagine after March 1st, we're going to see a recalibration of this message. I imagine we're going to see a Congressman Roy and Senator Cruz lightening up a little bit. So as they sort of track back toward the center to get some of those moderate Republican votes. But we just think it's egregiously wrong.
So you think, Pastor Johnson, after they get through the election, that they won't have to use this rhetoric and go after public schools as much after their voters have already turned out and cast their ballots in, right?
That's why we say we're in a moral crisis, Jason. Well,
Pastor, what do you think the end game is for these conservative lawmakers?
They don't know, and we don't either. Their whole project is chaos. They have no plan. They have no purpose. They have no clarity of vision. The scripture says, where there is no vision, the people perish, and we are in it right now. We've got an education crisis. We've got a healthcare crisis. You know, we've got an energy crisis. This state is in a very tenuous place right now.
So Pastors for Children, you've got some radio and television ads, some spots that are coming out. What is it that those are aiming to do? What's sort of the call to action on those?
We are trying to empower and embolden the community to find their voice, to stand up and speak out for public education. We've got a disconnect, guys, between the community at large and the public school in the neighborhood. Because voting, you know, the people who are voting are older people whose children are they're a product of public schools, but their children increasingly are out of school. They don't have children in public schools, and they are more susceptible to the disinformation campaign coming out of the Heritage Foundation, the Charles Koch-funded Heritage Foundation, and Cato Institute, these powerful so-called think tanks in Washington that are funding this malarkey. Texas Public Policy Foundation here in Texas, Empower Texans, whatever their group is now, Michael Quinn Sullivan is the head of that group, who called public school teachers babysitters several weeks ago. One of our media spots is informing the public about that. We're trying to get them to go vote for a House member, Republican and Democrat, who will oppose vouchers, who will support funding, who will oppose the standardized tests, and who will support turning that classroom back over to the teacher who knows and loves those children and is best able to educate them and assess their educational progress.
Yeah, Pastor, some of our listeners might actually start hearing these ads or seeing them on television here shortly. And I'm curious because since, as you mentioned, the older voters are the most reliable voters who physically show up at the polls all the time, What is a parent supposed to do? I mean, how do they go and differentiate, you know, where someone stands on abortion, gun rights, you know, education, vouchers, et cetera? How do I go in there and dig up this information and actually use it to get something done?
Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it, Jason? It's a very good question. And I don't think we have any easy answers on that question. I'm going to tell you, you know, we're pastors, we're faith leaders, we're pro-life people. Okay. And so we too have, sometimes we're just confused about why education isn't part of a pro-life agenda, right? Why education, public education, isn't part of a patriotic, pro-American, a pro-capitalist, pro-business kind of message. It ought to be. So not only, I guess that reminds me to say to you guys, not only are we trying to wake up the public at large, the community at large, through parents, through teachers, we got, as I said, 1.2 million active and retired public school employees. What if they were really mobilized to vote? They would be a constituency, wouldn't they, that could be determinative in an election. Not only are we trying to light a fire under them, we're trying to get public servants like Congressman Roy. You know, I don't know him personally. Another reason why we just don't, you know, we just don't troll people. We don't attack people personally. Now, if you're a public servant and you're lying about our teachers, we're going to tag you. We're going to call you out every time. Now, that's a little bit different than a private citizen that is trying to do, you know, the right thing on behalf of our children and teachers. But we're trying to get the right wing of the Republican Party. I hate to say it. I'll get to the Democrats in a minute, guys. Just give me a minute. But the right wing of the Republican Party that's gone whole hog for vouchers, which are failed, basically is diverting public money to private interests for personal financial gain. Now, let me, in the same breath, let me talk about those Democrats that are in Austin and Dallas and Fort Worth and San Antonio. Their privatization model of choice is charter schools. Now we've got charter schools popping up all over the state that do the same thing, that take our public money without proper accountability and oversight and send them, channel them to private interests. So we're an equal opportunity offender. You know, we have a way, as we're not used to as pastors making everybody mad, y'all. We don't get that. You know, we're just trying to do the Article 7, Section 1 of the Texas Constitution, a general diffusion of knowledge being essential for the preservation of the liberties and rights of the people. The legislature of this state shall make suitable provision for public free schools. We look at Genesis chapter 2. God brought all the animals to the human to see what the human would call them. That's education. Education is absolutely necessary in order to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it. I don't mean to preach to y'all, but I do want to give you guys, you know, an understanding of what motivates us. This drives us nuts. Public education should not be a divisive issue.
Everything's divisive these days. You're exactly right. But this, Pastor, this is the first sermon we have had on y'all-itics. So,
actually, I would correct
that. You set the record for that.
I would correct that. We've been preached to many times, but I don't think it's ever come from the Bible.
Quoting scripture is the first here for us.
I'm curious, since we are quoting scripture here, though, Pastor. So you all are active on social media with this, obviously. You're hitting the airwaves with radio and TV spots. Does this also, these messages, do they creep into the pulpit? And is there a slippery slope there? Some people will say church and state, we need to keep them separate here. Does it make it its way there? And does that complicate things?
Jason, it's an insightful question. I'm try to be honest in everything I say, even when it doesn't fit our platform. Pastors are frightened today. And pastors are definitely cautious. And pastors are trying to hold their congregations together. During COVID, their people have scattered. They're just now coming back in person, right? After a long time of isolation and a long time of, as I say, the fragmentation of the congregational life. So I will say our pulpit pastors are looking to us to deliver their message. Now, having said that, I think most of our pastors are dedicated women and men who are announcing in the right kind of way, not a shrill partisan way, certainly not calling out anybody from the pulpit. I don't do that in my church in Fort Worth. They don't do that in their churches in Dallas. They're not going to be overtly partisan from the pulpit, but they are going to encourage people to go vote. They may do it at the end of the service. Hey, a number of pastors did this yesterday. Y'all, early voting starts tomorrow. Go vote and go find the, do your research, go find the candidate that's going to support our neighborhood public schools. That's the sort of soft approach, if you will, the indirect approach, if you will. And I'm going to brag, I've been hard on our politicians. Let me brag on them. When we walk into the Capitol during the legislative session, as we do every day, those House members and even the Senate members, the Senate under Dan Patrick's leadership has been very hard on public schools. The House is still affirming and supportive of public education, which is why we don't have a voucher plan in Texas. We're hearing now, offline sources, the governor telling rural Republican House members up for re-election, I know I'm talking about school choice, guys, out on the stump, but I really don't mean vouchers. So trust me on that. I really don't mean vouchers, you know. But we're saying, Governor, listen to yourself. Listen to the kind of confusing political situation that you're creating. Where's the call to civic responsibility? Where's the call to civic duty? Where's the call to patriotism, to Americanism, to stand up for the institution that made our country great, which is public education that educated all our children, took those kids off ranches in Texas that whose daddies had to sign a document with an X, the deed of their property, because they were not literate, and put those kids into a public system, school system, that made us the greatest state in the union. That's what we want to hear from our governor, guys. That's what we want to hear from our senators. Well, that's what we want to hear from our congressmen, not this baloney that they concoct. CRT, I want to say, okay, if CRT is a problem, if pornography is a problem, you guys have been in charge in Texas for 27 years. Are you just now discovering it? Are you producing it? What if we were to go all over the state and say that you were pornographers? You're more responsible than our public school teachers. Obviously, we're not going to do that. But you get the point. We're in this program of sheer destructive chaos. That's their only agenda, the only agenda. And that is wrong. That's immoral. We're going to call it immoral, much to Congressman Roy's chagrin. And we're going to keep calling it.
Pastor, I don't mean to put you in a box, but my final thing as I sum up here is, you're a white male evangelical Christian. I just don't hear a lot of white male evangelical Christians saying the things you're saying. They're saying just the opposite of them.
Jason, I don't get it. And you're not putting me in a box. It is the question, isn't it? It is the question. You know, we're at an interesting time in history. I'm going to try to put this pastorally. I get swole up too. I have friends that say, Charlie, for heaven's sakes, take a breath. God's on his throne and everything's going to be okay. You know, I feel a disproportionate weight of responsibility to go tell the truth as I understand the truth. Y'all, the truth, anybody, go to the Walmart and ask them, are teachers pornographers? Are they racists? You're going to get your answer, okay? Everybody knows that public school teachers are dedicated community leaders and servants. Jason, I don't know. We're in this time where, you know, white males, I'm soon to be 65, are losing their concentrated, centralized hegemony over the culture. And their influence is being divested to women, to people of color, to younger leaders like y'all. Look, y'all are media leaders. I'm looking at two young men right here. At least you look a whole lot younger than me.
I'm younger than Wheeler is, though.
I think that's the first time on this podcast we've been called young men, too.
So, you know, I think that's where we are. And I think that our political leaders are creating a lot of fear. Do I think our Texas citizens lead with fear? And no, I don't. And discrimination? No, I don't. Do I think our pastors preach that from the pulpit? No, I don't. I just think that, you know, some of our pastors have been co-opted by these divisive political leaders who are advancing their political platform on the backs of public school teachers. Let that sink in, gentlemen. Let that sink in. These are the people who are with our poorest children all day long, every day, working 60 hours a week. And these politicians are attacking them, not on our watch, not without a pushback. And we may be Jeremiah crying in the wilderness, you know, 40 years without a convert. I guess we'll see March 1, won't we?
Well, there you have it. And as we go into this election season, there's your primer right there. Reverend Charlie Johnson from Fort Worth, thank you for taking the time with us and sharing this with us and even getting some preaching in there, because now Whiteley, who probably didn't make it to church over the weekend.
Amen. Amen. You know what, Pastor, happy early birthday to you. Wheeler had, this is a big year for Wheeler also, but we'll be celebrating you for 65 this year. That's fantastic.
You guys are great. Keep up the good work, and God bless you.
So Wheeler, he was quoting a lot of scripture in there. I expected you to throw out some biblical verses as well, man. Where were you?
It's funny how that happened, that when he started doing that, your light went off there, because we're recording here on Zoom.
It went off again.
Seriously, I know. Just now when you said scripture, it went off again. I do see a message here. I do see some messages happening.
I don't know what's going on here, man.
I'm glad you got some churching in there, and maybe that improved your religiosity a little bit as well.
Big word there. Yeah, you play Scrabble over the weekend? What happened? Where'd you get that?
That would be like a 64-point word. But, you know, he made some really strong statements there, and he's coming out very forcefully. And again, he's doing it. He's giving it to both sides here. He's giving it to both parties. And I know, you know, some people get annoyed when they hear this both sides isms. It's clear where the thrust of this is going, and that is to the far right, though. But it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, it doesn't stop there. So let's go back to that Facebook feed. When I was scrolling through it before going to bed the other night, I was going through it, and someone posted on there an article from Baptist News saying, "Stop the insanity and the attacks over public education." So I was thinking it was clickbait. I said, okay, I'll bite. You know, it's late. I'll see what it is. And I clicked on it, opened it up, and it was essentially another white male, religious conservative, evangelical, who was making the argument that, hey, these attacks on public education from the right have got to stop. So I looked this guy up. His name's Mark Wingfield, and reached out to him and said, hey, Mark, you got to join the podcast. And he's on the line with us right now.
Hey, Mark, thanks for being on the podcast with us today. We understand that you are super busy following this op-ed, that the responses have been pouring in. So thanks for being here.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay, Mark, I want to start with this first question here. You wrote in this op-ed, "It is disgusting, dismaying, and disheartening to see the continued attack on public education from conservative evangelical Christians and people who pretend to be evangelical Christians," you wrote, "but couldn't find John 3:16 in the Bible if you asked them. You said it is time to stop being shocked at this behavior and stand up against it." So my question is, what is someone supposed to do with this information?
Well, so my kids are grown. I have twin boys who are 29 years old. We live in Lake Highlands in Dallas. We're in Richardson ISD. My kids went from first grade through 12th grade at Lake Highlands High School and in the Lake Highlands system, right? And had a wonderful experience here. I last year went and spoke at the Richardson School Board meeting against banning books because this same group of parents was there just spreading the crazy. At the time, it was about masks and race, and they didn't want their kids exposed to books on, you know, race that made them feel bad and all this. And here I am, just a concerned parent who still, I mean, I can see my elementary school out my window here. We're that close to it. Still involved, still have neighbors with kids in the school. So I care deeply about it. And you can be heard. Now, unfortunately, things have not gone well in our top-rated school district, because more people who have this view have not stood up. And we've had some Trojan horses, I think, get through on the school board. And that's a whole nother issue.
So is that part of the reason why you wrote this op-ed, is to sort of shake other parents out there and go, hey, I know that you're working like crazy and you're busy, but you got to show up to these things because otherwise there's no voice opposing?
Well, no, that's exactly right, because the people like me don't want to be confrontational. But the people who are trying to take over school boards right now, they're all geared up to be confrontational. And so we've got to be awakened and we've got to be activated, because it is, I'm absolutely convinced all the data show this is a minority. It is a very vocal minority nationwide that's being motivated, stoked by some big interests to come and take over schools and school boards. It is not a majority opinion.
I thought what was really important about your op-ed, Mark, is that you went back and you talked about the history of this. And I grew up in the South, and you mentioned some history that I did not know. I was part of integration, I understand, kind of how some of this unfolded, but I didn't realize all of this here, too. You talk about the opposition to this goes back to the 1960s. This is 60-something years old. You talked about just the issues around that. It took me back to thinking about Ruby Bridges, Little Rock, Arkansas, Central High School there when she was 6 years old. Back then, though, you wrote that in order for parents to get away from integration, they would just go through their churches and start their own private schools to protect their kids way. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, no, that was the vast majority of faith-based private elementary and high schools in America were started after Brown versus Board of Education. And there is a direct link in the formation of those, whether you own up to it or not, the fact is that there was a surge in this. So I grew up in Central Oklahoma. I was born in 1961, so I'm 60 years old. I grew up largely in a suburb of Oklahoma City where I did not know a single Black person, not one. It was so lily white, right? Because the place was so segregated. So that's one way that happened. But even there, we had an independent fundamental Baptist church down the road that had started their own school because of the encroaching secularism, even in the 1970s. In our public school system.
So, Mark, you make the argument in this op-ed that it used to be that, because people didn't want their kids mixing with kids who had darker skin than them, that they would send their kids to private school. This is an interesting graph in your op-ed here. You say, but now the plan has broadened. Parents who want their kids educated in a world that hasn't existed since Little House on the Prairie are desperate to divert taxpayer funding from public schools to support their sectarian private schools. They're not willing to pay the price for being isolationists, and having failed at this unconstitutional effort, they're now trying to take over entire school boards and bend the will of public education to their whims. You see this as a coordinated thing. You say it's a minority of people doing this, but you see this as a very coordinated effort that has been in the works for some time.
Oh, absolutely. And there are several national groups, and we've documented this in other stories, and groups like Pastors for Texas Children and other groups like them have well documented the coordinated effort that's going on here. And, it's an interesting strategy because on one level, it's destructive, because the first goal is to discredit public education. And the reason that's important is because many of these folks want to divert public funding from their failing public schools into their successful charter schools and private schools, right? And the way you do that is you prove that the public schools are failing. So you set them up to fail. That's the beginning strategy to this. Now, ultimately, they want to get that money going. But then the new twist is there is a subset that now wants to just simply take over the public school. I honestly don't know if that is, even if that's not successful, if you sow enough doubt in public education, this is the same play that we're seeing happen on election integrity all across the country. All you have to do is make people suspicious, right? And that's what this is about, ultimately, is weakening the bonds of support for public education as we know it, so that you can say, oh, look, they're failing. And we need to take that money and give it to schools that are going to do good. And here's our private school that's going to do that.
Martin, let's talk about the headlines that we're all seeing. Superintendents quitting across the state. In North Texas, we've had, what, 7, 8, 9, something like that.
9.
Including Richardson ISD, where you were talking about recently.
Right.
Critical race theory has been out there. A lot of people don't understand what in the world that is. In Tennessee, a school board there banned a book about the Holocaust. And then the governor, after that ban, the governor said, yeah, we need to take a look at all this stuff, at all the books in the public school libraries to make sure they are age appropriate. There's something kind of similar happening in Texas, as we all know, too. But then you also mentioned your op-ed about a state senator in Oklahoma and something that he is proposing. And since you wrote this, you've heard from the state senator. Tell us what he's proposing and what he said after your op-ed.
So this state senator has proposed a bill that I understand from his email to me this morning, he is now withdrawn, but he's accused me of slandering him and his good name by pointing out the fact that he had introduced this legislation that would have imposed a minimum $10,000 fine on a public school teacher who leads any child to be taught or told something that's contrary to their own deeply held religious beliefs, which, as I pointed out in the op-ed, is insanity. What teacher would work in that system? But yet this guy wrote me back a lengthy email this morning accusing me and my mother, who is long dead, by the way, because I mentioned in the op-ed that I'm the child of a public school teacher who taught a lot of her career in Oklahoma. And he has lumped her in with the vast left-wing conspiracy that he sees going on. And, she's been dead 10 years and hadn't taught in 30. But he's not bothered to asking those questions. He's just automatically lumped her in with this thing that he sees as this ever-present threat of leftism. And it's just, I mean, the only word I can think of is insanity. There is nothing rational about this thought.
When you saw that you had an email in your inbox from him after writing this, you know, and you're asking other people to get involved, did you feel, I mean, that email could have said anything when you clicked on it. It could have been a way to go, you know what? I read this. I had a different perspective after reading this.
Yeah,
it could have said a lot. Yeah, I know. It's okay to be hopeful, though, right? But, you know, it could have said so many things. You know, is that demoralizing for you that, you know, you're pushing this envelope and, you know, you're getting a pushback, you know?
Yeah.
And how do other people think, well, yeah, let me get involved in this?
Well, you know, we journalists develop tough skin over time. I've been doing this a long time. And you learn, I know that what I'm saying is right. And I know that I called him out justly on this. So I don't have remorse in that regard, because I know the facts are on my side. He's not dealing in facts. He's dealing in some alternate reality that he sees here. And so it's humorous. It's sad. I mean, to think that someone with such a bizarre ability to not reason can get elected to the state Senate in Oklahoma. And I'm sure he could get elected in Texas as well. It's just mind-boggling that it's come to this.
I thought this next line that I'm about to read here was the most important in there, and probably one that might be the lightning rod. Mark, you wrote that we cannot fail to connect the dots between this attack on public education and the larger political maneuverings in our nation. This is, you wrote, at root about Christian nationalism, and more specifically, white Christian nationalism. This is motivated by racism, fear of science, and a desire to rewrite history. It is taking the failed tiki torch lit slogan of Make America Great Again and applying it to public education. What has been the reaction to evangelicals, fellow Baptists, Christians? What have they said about this?
Well, first of all, this opinion piece is by a landslide the most read thing on our site this year so far, and is accumulating tens of thousands of page views. So it's certainly being passed around and shared. And most of it is in a very positive way, with people saying, yes, this is exactly how I feel. Thank you for saying this, right? Because again, there's an unspoken majority that's just tired of getting trampled on by these extremists. Yes, there are a few people, I've had to go through and delete some nasty comments off of the social media where people have responded with just, you know, typical conspiracy theories. But the point is, all of this is related. And the root of this is what we call white Christian nationalism. And this is what's driving the ginned up debate over critical race theory. That's not a real problem. It's been labeled as such. This is what's driving the desire to ban books and all of these things. It ultimately is seeking control of society, not just schools, but schools are emblematic of that, right? By a narrow white Christian nationalist religion.
So let me ask you this then. If it's white Christian nationalism, is it going to primarily take other white Christians who don't agree with it to make the change, to spearhead the change?
Yes, I think so. This is one of the keys that's got to happen. But it's got to be a coalition too, because again, look at the demographics of America today. And fewer than 50% of people, Gallup says, are members of churches today. Churches, synagogues, any religious organization. So you have more than half of the population that's not actively affiliated with religion. So that's an important part of it, right? But as to circle back, one of the things that I noted earlier is we also know from the data that there are a lot of people who are latching on to this right-wing ideology who call themselves evangelical, but really are not even Christian. They've attached this as a political label. So the very word evangelical today, sadly, has been made into a political label more than a religious label. And so we are speaking against this Christianized form of politics, but also politics that's claimed the name of Christian.
But to put a finer point on that, you think that other white Christians need to show up and say, hey, the people that you've seen at some of these school board meetings, they don't represent all of us.
This is right. That's why someone like me is at a school board saying, look, this is why I get a hearing, right? Because I am an older white male, and you've got to use the privilege you have. I'm not saying it's good for me to have this privilege, but I've got it. And how am I going to be responsible with it, right? So I can show up and say this, and they say, look, he is a religious leader. He's a male. He's white. He's been in this district for 23 years. We've seen him. We know his kids. We know his family. We know he was involved as a volunteer in the school system throughout. And you have some credibility, and more people like me need to be speaking up.
Mark, but what is the end goal of these white Christian nationalists? To be the school board and the president of the school board and decide this stuff or what?
Well, this is what we see happening in other districts. You know, the Cy-Fair district outside Houston is a great example of this, where in the last election cycle, they unseated three incumbents, including a Black Baptist pastor who was the only Black member of the board with three of their far right candidates. And then they've immediately begun dismantling equity and inclusion initiatives by the district. That is a strongly diverse ethnically diverse district outside Houston, right? And I believe it's the second largest district in the state as well. And they're having this effect, right? This is where one of the new school board members made the comment that was recently was very disparaging about the ineffectiveness of Black teachers in the district. And so, yeah, they once they're there, they are making immediate changes and pushing for changes. And sadly, you know, here again, back to Richardson, why did we lose our superintendent? We lost our award-winning, recognized superintendent, Jeannie Stone, because the school board would not support her. There was not a majority left on the school board that would stand up against the bullies and support her. And she said, I don't have to take this anymore.
Well, part of the reason that I think it's so interesting to talk to you about this right now, because of what you just said there, is that early voting is now underway in the primary this starting this week. And we've got elections coming up this year, and that includes, you know, in some cases, school board elections. And those are the ones that no one pays attention to. You know, it's further down the ballot. Maybe you don't know the names. You haven't really kept up. But be guaranteed that political parties are keeping track of those elections, even though they're nonpartisan. The political parties are more and more getting involved in those very hyper-local elections.
Yes. So, and again, go back to Cy-Fair District outside Houston. The Houston Republican Party was deeply involved in organizing the campaign of those three new school board members who unseated the three incumbents in one fell swoop. First time ever they've documented this level of political party affiliation in a massive campaign effort. And here again in Richardson, I just saw a notice a couple of days ago that one of the parents who's been a ringleader in raising havoc at the school district is running for the open seat that represents my zone here in Lake Highlands. And, you know, this is, it's the playbook. And when I say playbook, I mean literally a playbook. You can go on websites from some of these Heritage Foundation type organizations, including the Heritage Foundation, and you can download a literal playbook on how to take over your school district.
And
they're
just
out
to,
there.
Just to pull that thread a little bit more, when you talk about people taking over the boards of these school districts, who hires the superintendent? And we see how many openings there are. It's the school board that hires
the
superintendent.
Board. Yeah, and you got to wonder who would want to be a school superintendent right now.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah,
that's got to be the worst job ever.
That's a good point. But are these Cy-Fair is a huge district on the north side of Houston. But are these kind of just scattered cases, or how critical do you think this is right now in the state of Texas?
Well, so we see this happening statewide. We see this happening nationwide. Now, it is true that there has been a concerted effort, and when you talk to Charlie Johnson, he can document this more. There's been a concerted effort to focus on North Texas through this effort, but it is much, much broader than that. And we see this happening just border to border in the state. We see it happening coast to coast in the nation. It is a concerted effort. And I know this sounds crazy, but it's documented online. You can find plenty of examples of this, of these coordinated efforts where resources are being provided and pushed out by some of these political action committees that they are fueling this is not a grassroots protest. This is a coordinated political campaign that's being infused to look like a grassroots protest.
And Mark, let's say that you know this continues to spread across the state. What do these conservatives get if they take over public education?
Oh, well, you get so much, because you can change curriculum. You can determine who's hired and who's fired. You can control what's taught in classrooms, just like, you know, this bill that was offered in Oklahoma from a legislative side. But school districts, you know, offer a lot of shape on this. And one of the things that's being undone through this is so much progress that had been made in making everyone feel welcome in public schools. And Richardson ISD had been an example. Dr. Stone's wonderful work on equity and inclusion, a model district in this. And this is what this group is going after, because they don't like it. And yet, the reality is Richardson ISD, people would be very surprised by this, is not it is not as uniform in its ethnicity as people would expect. There's a lot of diversity, even in the suburban district here.
You know, when we talk about critical race theory, I think a lot of people don't even know really what that is. And just very basically, it means that, you know, racism isn't necessarily something that's held by me or held by you in the way we do things. It's sort of embedded into the system of the United States. And so there's a lot of fear that that's being taught to children, that, you know, the United States is just endemically racist. This worked, though, in the Virginia elections for governor. It was a huge issue there, even though it wasn't necessarily being taught in classrooms across the state. And now we're seeing this being brought up a lot here in the midterms this year. How much of a fear do you have that people, you know, might not be paying attention? They hear this buzzword, this buzz phrase, and they think, yeah, I don't want that either. And that this becomes the model, that Virginia thing becomes the model.
Oh, no, that's exactly it. And again, we've documented, this is not a secret that this is a political strategy. It was originated by one person largely who saw an opportunity for this to turn critical race theory into the modern boogeyman. And it has been, it's become the catch-all buzzword. I mean, it's like communism. So it's McCarthyism all over again. But it's not communism, it's critical race theory. And yet we have, I've run dozens of opinion pieces by Black clergy and Black lay leaders saying, you've got it wrong. You don't even understand what this is about, right? But you're using this word, and it, you know, it reminds me of that famous line from The Princess Bride. I don't think that word means what you think it means. But people are just throwing around like they know what it means because it sounds good.
But Mark, you say it's all political. I'm sure that you've probably heard this in some of the comments that you've gotten from people after this op-ed who say that you're being political, that you're choosing a political side here, that you're going beyond religion that you should be writing about, and that you clearly have a political agenda.
Yeah, I hear this all the time. And here's my answer to that. Particularly in the past 6 years, the political religious landscape in America has shifted so far to the extreme right that those of us who used to be in the middle now look like we're on the extreme. We haven't moved. We haven't changed. I'm the same person I was 6 years ago, but the landscape underneath us has shifted so far under the unbelievable right that it makes everything else look political, right? And what in any other context previously would have been a nonpartisan statement, like believing in facts and science. This is normal middle, but now that we're extremists.
Well, on the left, you're seen as an extremist on the left now.
That's right.
For standing in the middle.
I'm still standing where I was.
Right. A lot of people haven't moved. It's worth restating here, Mark, my final thing for you. It's worth restating that education, public education, is the great equalizer. And I want to end my thing here with another quote you said. You said, it's time to make plain that whatever sincerely held religious beliefs that some parents may have, they may not force those beliefs in the revisionist history on all children. After this conversation, what am I supposed to do with this information? Because my kids are school-aged children. School, as Jason mentioned earlier, school races just don't get a lot of news coverage because there are so many districts. You know, Dallas has 17, Houston has 20 in Harris County alone. What do I do with this info, and how do I, protect my own school system?
Well, and you just highlighted both the good and the bad of the situation, and the reason this is an effective strategy for this extreme religious right group is that it's much, when you think about the number of votes it takes to turn a school board election, it is in the hundreds, not even in the thousands.
Maybe not the hundreds, you know that.
It is a very small microcosm to do this, right? And so when you can't win elections on a national level, or a state level or wherever, it's very easy to come in and win a single school board election. But the same is true for us too, right? If you let people know and activate them so that they'll show up and vote, but there's a fired up, activated, far-right religious base and pseudo-religious base that is working on this. And if we are asleep at the switch, we're going to wake up and they will have taken over every public school around us with this agenda. And suddenly things are going to change.
Mark, what I just heard there was you telling Whiteley that if he really wants to get involved, he should run.
At least vote and at least show up. You know, I think one of the things I would say is our existing teachers and superintendents and principals need to hear some love from us. They are embattled. They are worn down. You got the pandemic that's beat them up terribly. You've got parents carping from every direction on things. It is the toughest job possible in education right now. And I think anything we can do to show some love and to show some support, they need to know that we're with them.
Yeah, I think that final point deserves an exclamation put at the end of it there. You know, we've seen so many superintendents leaving their jobs. The Texas AFT, the statewide union with 66,000 members, did a poll late last year and found 66% of their members had considered leaving their jobs in the past year. Imagine that while you're listening to this, your kids going to school, 2 out of 3 of their teachers deciding to hang it up. And I think a lot of people, you know, for all the carping that these teachers get, I think a lot of people are very pleased generally with the teachers who are instructing their kids. So, you know,
and they should be, because we have an outstanding public school system. It's not broken. Can it be improved? Sure. But it is not broken. It's not it's not indoctrinating leftist propaganda. It is teaching kids how to think. And this is what's so dangerous to some people, because they honestly don't want their kids to be taught how to think.
Good way to sum up the podcast here, man. Thank you so much for the time, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
Before y'all leave, click subscribe and get Y'allitics every week. And if y'all want to talk instead of listen, you can reach the Jasons anytime on the Y'allitics hotline at 214-977-6020. That's 214-977-6020.
And so that is the rewind on that. Now we do the fast forward as we head into this next legislative session. And interesting thing on the list of priorities for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick coming into this legislative session, and you were talking about this,
right,
is that, you know, he always puts out this list of legislative priorities, and he gets to select really what's going to move through. If it doesn't have his blessing, it's, you know, going to be kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And you didn't see it on there.
He left it off the list. Now, what was that strategic? If it's on the list, he's clearly for it. If it's off, you know, if he states that he's against it, but he left it off the list.
Mm-hmm. Which
now,
isn't stating that you're against it.
You're not against it, and you could easily bring it in. It might not be a priority, but it could be something he supports.
And could it be brought in at a last minute?
Why wouldn't it? There's support for it. I mean, we saw what he did with open carry as well, too. It didn't have support for the longest time. It was Dan Patrick who finally helped get that passed.
Well, and if I didn't want to get the opposition to something that I was interested in, if I didn't want to get them all riled up and ready for battle, I might not publish it either.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility as well.
Greg Abbott, the governor who just got reelected last November, mm-hmm. he said that he expressed support for this, which is unusual as well because he hasn't really done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, he says he's for it. Dan Patrick, who leads the Senate, Lieutenant Governor, didn't say he's against it. He just didn't include it on his priority list. So will it show up between now and the end of May in the legislature?
This is one of the reasons why we wanted to press play on this once again, not only because it was our second most downloaded episode of 2022, but also because this could very well be a big fight that could touch pretty much every family in Texas who has school-aged children, and it could happen here in 2023.
If there's anything stopping this, as you just heard in the episode there, I think it's going to be the rural Republicans who
right.
don't have as much access to private schools. They have to rely on the town school or the county school and things like that. They've been against this. But will they come around? That's the question.
Well, as Ed Lavandera pointed out to us here at Westlake Brewing when we did a podcast with him last year, in a lot of cases, the school is sort of the central meeting place in a lot of these smaller rural towns, and it's the town is built around that public school. And in many cases in those rural areas, the school district is the biggest employer. So, you know, it runs counter to a lot of people's ideas of what progress is in those places that are very conservative.
No doubt.
It's going to be an interesting fight if it happens.
Get ready for that one. There's a lot coming up January 10th. So a week from Tuesday when the legislature gavels back into session. And we're actually going to be heading down there here within the next few days to kind of preview what all the fights are. But we wanted to play this one for you before we get on the road. If I'm riding with Wheeler, it's only going to take a few minutes to get from Dallas to Austin. This guy is like, you know, he could give Mario Andretti a run for his money.
I told you I've slowed 35. Down. I've slowed down.
Have you really?
I have. I've made a conscious decision
to
slow down.
You put a governor on your 911?
I need a governor on that thing.
Yeah. You should.
But we're going to mosey on down to Austin, and we're going to bring you that next week. And you know, we're taking Yellowtics on the road with Whiteley's credit card.
Yeah, we'll do it. Happy New Year, guys.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Yellowtics. Like a post, leave a comment, or let us know the next beer that Jason should try.